we begin the discussion of marriage with a source that I found so fascinating. You're familiar with American Vice President Mike Pence. You know already what I'm talking about. This is amazing. People just know this. Like, no one even pays attention to a vice president, and certainly not with this guy as president. No one pays attention to a vice president. But this did it. There was an interview with him in the Washington Post, and it was actually not an interview with him. It was a story about his wife. It was a story about Karen Pence, and she declined to be interviewed. But the reporter who did the story about her dug up some old information, which the reporter found interesting, and it's quoted here in this article in Commentary Magazine. Source number 14. The reporter uncovered a 15-year-old interview with Mike Pence and informed us. In 2002, Mike Pence told The Hill, it's a paper, that he never eats alone with a woman other than his wife, and that he won't attend events featuring alcohol without her by his side either. You heard this story? Okay, some people heard, some people did not. What's your reaction before you read further in the article? How do you react to that quote?
That was my first reaction. My first reaction was, I can't believe this. And I kept reading different sources to make sure this wasn't a hoax story, because you can't believe it. I mean, I worked in a man's world in my career for over 38 years. And I worked with very religious Catholic men, for example. Like, I know this guy's religious, but yeah. My senior boss most of my career was very serious religious Catholic. He'd never think this way. I mean, because you work with your cohorts and your colleagues, which is what they're talking about being with. Mm-hmm. He's not talking about dating. He's talking about if it was a colleague in his work. And it just blew me away to just, after my whole career, to think that a man still thinks that way in 2002 or whatever year it was.
Well, that was when he gave the interview, but it still does continue today.
Because he knows his wife, and she is very mistrustful of him.
You think so?
It's for his wife's sake. Rona suggests maybe he's afraid of gossip. What are people going to say if they find out he went to dinner with somebody, maybe he went multiple times, and the possibility of reputation, which is a very big issue. You know, it's very funny. In terms of just the religious aspect of it, this is actually modeled on the evangelical church. It's something, I think it was Billy Graham. It was either Billy Graham or Franklin Graham who proposed that people do this. And there's a Christian news outlet. When I started looking for articles to quote on this, I found them, that has been posting articles on a regular basis ever since this became news with, you could basically fill in the blank. If you remember, like, the old Mad Libs things, where you just fill in blanks. So fill in the blank with anonymous politician, pick your own politician. But if so-and-so had followed Mike Pence's practice, he would now still be in office.
Right.
You know?
That's good.
You know, and it's true, and they have no shortage of headlines to do with this.
We just had a senator resign.
Right. Yeah. That's right.
That was way worse.
I mean,
he sounded good to tell a journalist this. That's the point that.
No, he actually does this. This is testified to.
No, I understand that. What I'm saying is he felt that by telling, it was in an interview at the time.
Yes.
He did it.
Yeah.
And to think that made him look like a better person. Says so much about
him. I don't know if he was saying. I mean, you have to go back and dig up the original interview. I don't know in what context it was stated. So
probably is saying, in fact, this is who I am, and this is my reputation. And there have been, I mean, the history in Congress.
Yes, over the last 30 years. Like
Newt
Gingrich, for example.
Yes. But so many, or maybe they asked him, maybe they heard about it and asked him to confirm it. We don't know, without looking at the interview, and frankly, even when you do look at an interview, because they like to edit the interviews.
I was in 2017, a 2002 interview. Some of that is so
sad. But it's astounding.
Yes.
Come on, 2022, 23.
Okay, so take a look, please, at the rest of this. Okay, yes.
My husband is a physician. and he will not do an internal exam on a woman without having a nurse in the room.
Right.
And I think that this is almost the same. He is protecting himself from a woman who could decide to...
Keep in mind also, in I don't know about in Canada, but in the U.S., that's the law.
Maybe he's protecting himself from somebody who...
In the U.S., that's actually the law. I mean that you can lose your license as... Okay, here it's protocol, but in the U.S., you can lose your license to practice as a physician.
When I had my son 46 years ago in California, my obstetrician was not allowed to see me without the nurse in the room. Not that she did anything.
No, she didn't.
She had to be a witness. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of litigation and accusation that comes up years later.
The best practices come from fear of litigation. You know that. Well, take a look at the rest of the article, because I feel like I dropped the hand grenade, but now we have to do something with it. We're in the third line, beginning of the third line in number 14. For Democrats and liberals, mainstream journalists included, this revelation overwhelmed the rest of the profile. You have to keep in mind, this is a quote from Commentary magazine. That's a more right-wing magazine, so just you have to be aware of that. Commentary? Oh, yes. Yeah. For Democrats, I like them, but yes. For Democrats and liberals, mainstream journalists included, this revelation overwhelmed the rest of the profile. Everything around it faded from view. What followed was much more than a condescending snigger or two. Social media exploded has become a cliche on the order of it rained buckets or he went ballistic, because social media, at least in the hands of political journalists, is always exploding over one triviality or another. But you really had to be there to see the foaming stew of outrage that this bit of news provoked. And that is very true. I mean, I had a wealth of articles I could have brought you from people who were horrified and said, this is exactly what's wrong with the way Republicans look at women. This is exactly what's wrong with the evangelical church. I gave you a link to one article in number 15 called Mothers in Waiting, How Mike Pence and the GOP See Women. And it was, whatever, you'll read it yourself if you want. There was such anger over this on one side, people who were horrified and said it demeans women, he thinks that all women are temptresses, and so on and so forth. And then people on the other side who said, what are you talking about? He's trying to either protect his reputation, or he's afraid of his own temptations, and he knows himself, and he says, this is what I need in order to be safe, because I don't need to be a fool. Judith.
Just an added point, though. Wait, you missed a big point. It's in the public. He says, I don't go out to eat with women.
Yes.
So he could be sitting in his office alone with a woman doing God knows what, excuse my expression. Heaven knows what.
He never eats alone with a woman.
He never eats alone with a woman other than his wife.
Because then he's also talking about attending events.
With alcohol. No, those are two different. In other words, I think I'm not Rashi on the interview.
No, but
I think it's eating alone in private also, Judith.
This may be a very generous assessment, but even the fact that he's a religious man. And we know that when we listen to Orthodox Jews speaking, we know they come from a particular perspective. Mm-hmm. And it's sort of right for them to be talking to them in a certain way regarding any topic. Mm-hmm. Right? So for this man, he might have been trying to say, and he wasn't clever enough to understand, it could be badly misunderstood, that I am safe. You choose me. I'm a safe candidate because I will obey and not cause scandal.
Right.
It's a possibility.
It's certainly possible. Certainly possible. I hear that. Indiana.
He knows his constituency.
Yeah. Yeah, could be. So I want to discuss this, but first we have to talk about marriage in general in Judaism before we get back to what Pence is doing and where it fits within Judaism. Because I think it's a very important thing that has to be understood from a Jewish perspective. I mean, I will tell you right now, we'll come back to it, but there is a law in Hebrew called the law of Yichud. Right? What does Yichud mean? Close. Seclusion. Seclusion, being alone with somebody else. And it prohibits a man or woman from being alone with somebody else's spouse. We'll see it. We'll get to it later on. We're not. Yeah, you can see it on the bottom in source number 20. I did get to include that on the sheet. But but it's a basic prohibition. So don't think that we're going to be pointing fingers at the evangelicals. It's a question within Jewish law as well. So let's go back, though, to what marriage is in the Jewish view. Take a look at source number 16, please, where Maimonides makes two very interesting historical statements. This is in the beginning of his Laws of Marriage. First one. Before the Torah was given, a man would meet a woman in the market, and if he and she wanted to marry, note, there's your answer, if he and she wanted to marry, he would bring her to his home, live with her privately, and she would be his wife. That was the way it was done pre-Sinai. You met somebody, saw you, before Sinai. For those who don't know, that's a dating website, saw you at Sinai. Okay. Yes. So, before the Torah was given, they just meet, they like each other, they decide they want to get married, he brings her to his home, and she'd be his wife. And when I use, in general, you'll see in the translations, when I use the word live with her, that's a euphemism. It doesn't mean they went to Bed Bath and Beyond and brought stuff for the kitchen or whatever. Once the Torah was given, Israel was commanded that if a man wishes to wed a woman, he must transact with her first in front of witnesses, what's called in Hebrew a kinyan. That's what's accomplished today with the giving of a ring. That's called kiddushin. And then she will be his wife, as in the verse in Deuteronomy, when a man takes a woman. The term take, as used in Hebrew, yikach, is a term that's used for engaging in a transaction. So that's the source that he's citing biblically, although of course there's a lot of Talmudic discussion as well. What are the methods of transaction? What's acceptable for a transaction? I once officiated at a wedding in which they couldn't find the ring. The ring was missing. And I'm officiating at the chuppah, and we're all standing there, and it's like a sitcom, you know, like, where's the ring? And I'm stalling and explaining why we do different things, and it was great. Everyone had a whole class on how Jewish weddings work. And at one point I said, you know, you could use a bottle of soda. Like, it doesn't have to be a ring. It's more romantic when it's a ring. And there are all sorts of layers of meaning involved with rings and metal and the like. But I said, you could, if we're stuck. Like, you don't need it. They ended up finding it in the bottom of a caterer's bag, which, yeah, that's a little fishy. The moral of the story is watch the ring. So, but Maimonides says that we changed certain things about how marriage worked. Right? What did we add to marriage? Two elements here in this paragraph.
Well, witnesses is one thing.
Witnesses and? And the transaction, correct. Witnesses and transaction. Both of those matter for reasons we're going to come back to. But take a look at the next paragraph I quoted from him. It's a couple of paragraphs later in his Code of Law. He says, before the Torah was given, a man would meet a woman in the market. This is not talking about marriage now. And if he and she wanted, he would pay her and, once again, live with her by the fork in the road and leave. Meaning you didn't have to go home. They did whatever they did, wherever they chose to, and that was it. In other words, it didn't have to be marriage. Before the Torah is given at Sinai, the system by which the world works does not require marriage in order for two people to get together. They could do what they chose. This was called Kadesha. Kadesha is the terminology that is used. Yes, it sounds an awful lot like another word. Kadosh, right? One way to explain it is that the word kadosh actually means to be designated for a particular purpose. Something that is set aside and not just open, but designated for a particular purpose is kadosh. And that applies to many elements of holiness. And the idea here is that he's not talking about people who just meet socially, but actually where one of them is doing this as a career. This is what they do. It's prostitution is what he's talking about. So for a man, it's a kadesh. For a woman, it would be kadesha. There's a lot to say about that, but that's not where I'm going. I'm sorry, Pearl, you're going to say something? Yes, something? Okay. So he says, that's the way they did it. Once the Torah was given, kadesha was prohibited. That's one of those things that God says, I don't want you to do. So that what you have is the elimination of this temporary relationship. Permanence is required. This has to be a durable relationship. And in Maimonides' view, and I'm going to just say it rather than ask the question because we're short on time, but in Maimonides' view, what Judaism has done to marriage is twofold. Number one, it has made marriage more formal. You have official rituals, you have a transaction to engage in, and there's intent for it to last. And number two is that there's, going hand in hand with that, is that it's meant to be durable. Even though we have a concept of divorce, and we're going to have to get to that next week, nonetheless, there is a real commitment, there's a serious commitment involved. And the goal of marriage, which I think he is supporting here, is to go back to what we said when we defined love and when we talked about dating, it's to meet our needs, procreative needs, spiritual needs, within a formal, durable structure. That's what they're attempting to that's what Torah is attempting to do with marriage. Are we clear on that? Okay. Go a couple more minutes or we're, I don't know what time it is.
You have 2 more minutes.
I got 3 on my phone. Okay. So there are a number of institutions within Jewish marriage that are meant to make it more sound and more durable. Number one is a mitzvah called Onah. Onah literally means a set time. In Hebrew it's spelled Ayin Vav Nun He. It means a set time. But take a look at source number 17, where you'll find its meaning in our context. It's talking about polygamy. And we've talked about polygamy before, we may even have done it last week, how it's something which the Torah does not prohibit, because it maximizes the chance to have more children, right? You have a man being able to impregnate more than one woman in a period of time, as opposed to where he's married to one woman, and then all through pregnancy and nursing, it's unlikely that, certainly in pregnancy, but for the most part in nursing, it's going to be difficult for them to produce children. This way you have multiple wives. However, in Tanakh, it never works out well. We do not have a single happy case of polygamy in the entire Torah. And in the Talmud's time, you don't find any of the sages who were polygamous in an ongoing way. You do find one sage whose responsibilities included traveling from city to city to lecture and to handle court cases, and they set up for him. In each city, there was a designated woman who he knew he could marry. And the idea was that he should always know it's a possibility and therefore not be attracted to anybody else he encountered. It was meant to be a safeguard. But in general, you don't find polygamy. It didn't work. And ultimately, Ashkenazim banned it in the 10th century of the Common Era. Sfardim never had a formal ban on the practice. But in any case, going back to source number 17, what it's saying is in the event that a man is married and he marries another woman, he has to make sure that he will not reduce 3 things from his first wife. 1, food, meaning that he always has to support her in terms of food. 2, clothing. And 3, onah, this set time. And what it's referring to is sexual relations. He has an obligation to be with her. And the question then is, so how often is this obligation? And the answer is it depends on what his career was when they got married, because that determines what her expectations were. If he's a sailor, so he goes off to sea for months at a time, and she knew that going in, then there's one expectation. If he's somebody with a business in town, so she expected him to be around more often, then it's another. But it's based on what her expectations are. She can forgive it. She can say to him, I'm not interested. And then that's less of an obligation. But she can also say to him, this is what my expectation is, and he is bound. And let's not kid ourselves, the obligation is a two-way obligation, which I guess we'll have to talk about next time, leaving you on that note. But that's part of the understanding that this is a relationship in which they are going to try to procreate as part of it, and that it's also about the closeness of the relationship, not only the procreation, because the mitzvah extends beyond the time when they're of childbearing age. The mitzvah doesn't stop once they're no longer able to have children. There's a lot more to say about this. I feel like I rushed it and maybe that wasn't such a good idea. But hopefully you'll be back next week and we'll be able to talk more about it. If anybody needs to do registration,